You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Mark, taking a look at what's going on the markets, how would you describe the action and what are you doing about it?
Well, you know, I'm a little skeptical. We are experiencing quote-unquote end-of-the-month window dressing into the end of the month, and you had a bunch of earnings reports. Some mixed results. You know, Meta and Microsoft are down, but Google and even Apple was down a little bit post-market. So mixed among the Magnificent Seven. Everybody's holding their breath for the big-name stocks. So, you know, mixed report, but bottom line is I'm still in the sell-may-go-away mentality, you know, end-of-the-month window dressing, blow off here a little bit. Dow was up 700-800 points today, still shy of new record high, didn't really break out, but the S&P did. So, you know, it's, you know, I'm not buying good news at the top is what I'm saying. I think, you know, good news, some ran up, some ran down, but I think you're chasing the market here and I'm more inclined to step aside. You still have a war in Iran. Crude oil continues to go higher. Fortunately, we're long, you know, oil-related stocks, so we're benefiting there a little bit. I just think there's a lot of cross-current cycles coming in here into early May. And you know, my predisposition is to be taking profits and even playing a little bit on the short side here, betting that some type of pullback could ensue. Now, whether this is more than a very short-term event or something more significant, that I can't say. I'm looking out a bit. I think there is a lot of risk to the downside in the market. So we don't know what's going to happen now with the new Fed chairman coming in. You know, Powell is out, but we don't know what the interest rate decision is going to be going forward. I don't really think that's as important. In fact, raising rates is actually inflationary. In a way, people think that the raising rates tone down inflation, but it actually goes the other way. I don't think Kevin Warsh is going to raise rates, but if he does, that's you know, bad news for the inflation front. But in any event, you know, we just have a lot of cross currents here, and market's way overdone. I think overly optimistic considering what's going on in the state of the world geopolitically. You know, I think we're going to pay the piper here at some point, whether it's later this year or next year, but, I wouldn't be chasing, you know, the market. If you're a trader, then, you know, that's a whole other story because we're in and out of stuff all the time, you know, so we do well in some trades, but, you know, a lot of the interest in the market is really contingent on what's going to happen in the interest rate front. Are rates going to go down? If rates go up, it's an increased cost to business, which is passed on to consumers. Construction industry, home builders have suffered a little bit, and that's a big part of the economy. And maybe there's not much they can do about it right now unless they, you know, have a force majeure and they just really come in a big way on a government basis to support housing and get the market moving. But I think we're subsidizing housing, but big names like Home Depot and others sort of, you know, holding their breath, so to speak, waiting for the confirmation it's time to get back into real estate, which has been in a correction. So, you know, a lot of warning signs out there. And, again, some of the AI stocks and some of the, you know, uranium plays, nuclear plays, still, you know, catching bids and a lot of trades, a lot of stuff in the, you know, energy generation field, have been strong, but, you know, I just think it's time for a pause. So the bottom line is I'm a bit cautious.
Well, Jerome Powell says he may not be the chair of the Fed anymore when Warsh comes in, but he will still be one of the seven governors, and he doesn't plan to leave till 2008, so he will still have influence, one-seventh influence.
I know. I think he's trying to get even a little bit for the fact that the Department of Justice went against him with regard to the supposed impropriety with the expansion of the Federal Reserve building.
They dropped that case.
Donald Trump has been Yeah, they dropped it, so that's how Kevin Warsh got approved. But I'm saying I think he's a little bitter about that. I think he's a political guy. He lowered interest rates just before the election last year. So, you know, I just think he wasn't the best choice. He did a terrible job as a Fed chairman, keeping interest rates at zero for the longest time. And, of course, most Fed chairmen really haven't been that good. I mean, if you're looking at the history, even when I go back to Alan Greenspan, you know, I always joke about him and comparing him to a New York taxi cab driver, you know, slamming on the accelerator and slamming on the brake, going back and forth with interest rates. The history of the Fed is just notoriously bad. Mm. And basically, my whole opinion is abolish the damn thing, and I keep writing about it. Nothing is going to happen, but I think it's a dinosaur. It has to go. Basically, when this country was formed, I think the Treasury was supposed to be taking care of the money and not creating a third-party institution, which is a bank-contrived factor why the whole thing was created. Many of the banks owned shares in the original Federal Reserve, according to documents that we had read about going back to 1913. It's just a disaster. In fact, if you look back at history, rates were raised on the part of the Federal Reserve during the Great Depression at the worst possible time. Fed chairman, no Fed chairman, bad institution. We need to get rid of it. It'll eventually go. I mean, maybe not in my lifetime, but, you know, it had such a terrible track record. And Powell's on the board for another year and a half. I don't know if it's going to make, a big decision or not. Basically, they take a vote, and the majority sort of goes the way the interest rates, the way they vote, and the majority is against Powell, then his presence is not going to make a big difference. I mean, he seems to be a likable guy when you watch him and, hear him speak and so forth, but, terrible job. But it's the institution itself, the people that manage it, Janet Yellen before him, and these people are just, it's just ridiculously stupid. I mean, they react to events afterwards. They really don't prepare in advance. They don't see into the future in any way. They use the excuse everything is data driven. Well, it's like me as a technician in the stock market. You look at the footprints in the sand, you look at the charts, but if you look at balance sheets and you look at earnings reports, you're looking at history. You're not looking into the future, and that's the problem. You have to look into the future when you're doing these things. And, there's other ways you can do that. Technical analysis, it's charts. And charts probably help you more than anything else. But if you're data-driven, and so much Wall Street is, and you're looking into the past, you assume that's going to be the future, which may not be the case. So as a result of that, I'm very skeptical of earnings reports and all the nonsense around what the earnings are going to be and expectations and what analysts are expecting or not expecting. And they play games with this stuff, and they manipulate the stock market. They manipulate individual stocks. And there's inside information all over the place. Insiders know ahead of time if the earnings are going to be beaten or not, and then they act and position themselves accordingly. So I'm getting off on a tangent a bit here, but the Federal Reserve is about the same kind of thing. They're reacting to the past and not looking into the future. And some of the dumbest market prognosticators alive are economists, and unfortunately, as many economists involved with the Federal Reserve. So, what the future is going to hold here for the institution? There has been talk in recent years about curtailing the Fed, not necessarily going to the extreme of abolishing it, though. One or two congressmen had initiated bills just for that purpose. Really didn't go anywhere, and. What's going to happen? We have an election, midterm election coming up in the fall, and so much is dependent on what the economy and interest rates are doing. So it'll be interesting. We may see Warsh lower rates, despite people say that the odds are against it. And I keep also saying as many times in these interviews, Jim, interest rates are just part of the puzzle. What is the Fed doing it on? What are they manipulating with regard to the money supply? Are they increasing it, decreasing it? Are they doing secret activities in the back, like they've been exposed in the past, investing in private companies or bonds, which came out under the Freedom of Information Act. There's so much shenanigans going on here. I mean, it just, so the bottom line is you got to look at the market, and you look, and you do that by looking at the charts. And to me, you know, at least at the moment, they're extended. So I think it's time to be cautious.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, would you describe the charts on crude oil right now? Maybe describe it like the world's wildest skateboard park?
Well, it's in an uptrend, and the charts don't say it's going down yet. And, you know, many of the prognosticators, they were speculating you could see $150 or $200 oil, you know, maybe right, until the charts turn down and, you know, confirm. There's some divergence in the sense that some of the individual oil stocks haven't made new highs, even though crude oil is up there, so maybe that's a warning. But, you know, who knows? The chart for the oil itself is still, it's still in a bull market, so you know, you can argue it's all based on what's happening in the Mideast, but, you know, it could be other factors too, and also the fact that there had been a crisis over there. A lot of countries and other entities may be still very aggressive in the oil market, looking to accumulate it because of shortages. And we had all kinds of issues, as you know, with fertilizer and other elements that are needed in the agricultural industry. So a lot of things that could create buying pressure and keep it up for a while. So I'm on a bear on crude oil. In fact, I've going back in our interviews in the last couple of years, you may recall I was looking for, you know, $150, $100 or more in crude oil in coming years. And just a short, I was short-term bearish, and I became bullish. And I just think it's an underpriced commodity. It's too widely needed. Nuclear and other alternate sources are not replacing it so fast. Most of the world depends on it. We look at China. China really depends on crude oil in a big way, and they're supposedly a high-tech high-tech country. So it's an underpriced commodity, you know, for years and years. Just think about it. I mean, trading between $20 and $80, $90 a barrel for 20, 25 years, you know. I mean, well, gold has gone, you know, from 1,000 to 5,000. I mean, you know, you get that type of five times, you know, 10 times increase in price, you can see why crude oil needed to catch up a bit. So we're trading. You know, you're asking me a comment, you know. A couple of oil stocks have done well, and we just got to watch the tape here and see what it tells us. And I suppose if there's some dramatic news in the Mideast, that could impact it too. But it's funny, crude oil had turned up and was looking positive way before the actual shooting began in the Mideast. So you want to call it inside information or the fact that it was an underpriced commodity, but you know, you just got to watch the tape. So at the moment, you know, it's saying, it's not saying bear market yet, so I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, but at the same time, we're trading individual oil stocks.
Do you think these high gasoline prices will convince Americans and Canadians to switch to electric vehicles?
It depends on the price of the vehicles. You know, a lot of the consumers turned down because they were so expensive, and you know, it could be. It could be. You know, I'm not sure what the, you know, the economy is weak and jobs are scarce and people can't afford the EV vehicles. But yeah, as you know, there was a big push to hybrid where many decided, hey, I want to cover my bases. So I'll have a vehicle that I can use, but I can both charge and utilize gas. That's sort of my camp, honestly. I mean, I don't want to depend on only gas or electric. Gives you a little more flexibility. Electric, you know, you limit the amount of distance you can go if the gas is still available, even though you got to pay more for it. You have more mileage and distance if you have to take a longer trip. Though I have talked to many people that say they're on the road and they're very happy with Teslas and they can still recharge at various locations. But, you know, that still slows you down. So, I think it's a balance, Jim, honestly. I think a hybrid is really the solution, something that gives you both options. And maybe if technology improves significantly in coming years and decades, we can rely on alternate sources, you know, solar or, you know, even nuclear, perhaps. Some of these small nuclear generators maybe could be miniaturized to the point that they could fit in cars. So, you know, who knows what the future's going to hold. But I don't know if everybody's rushing out to buy EVs now or not. I know some of the prices have gone up a little bit, or they've become more in demand since the oil took off. But it would have to really stay up at a very high price for a long time, I think, before there was an overwhelming demand that would surpass the oil-related vehicles. So I'm just guessing like anyone else.
Well, if Americans wanted to know what it was like to live in Vancouver, take a look at your gasoline prices, because they come out to about $2.17 a liter. That's what you're paying, you know, per gallon, because 4 liters to the gallon. And in Vancouver right now, we're paying $2.17 a liter because we have the highest gasoline taxes in North America.
Yeah, the taxes are a killer, particularly in California. Here in the U.S., where they add so much on taxes that it makes gasoline almost unaffordable. It's crazy. Yeah, the taxes are really are murderous. So not much we can do about that unless you can afford to move and get out of those locations, you know. So
it's hard to find a city prettier than Vancouver.
That's true. It is one of the prettiest, but also probably the most expensive, too, right?
Oh, yeah. You pay a price for that beauty.
But, you know, Arizona's beautiful, too. And you have a lot of stuff down here. You don't have to, you know, you have a desert and you've got mountains and a lot of other places to live that offer great opportunity, both in terms of business and scenery. So, you know, I mean, a lot of people left California to come here, for example, because it's too damn expensive and taxes are too high, gasoline too high. They want to raise taxes on everybody there, and it's hard to do business. Some of the biggest billionaires have relocated out of California, most notably Elon Musk moving to Texas and many others moving as well because of the taxation. So I don't know if that's going to change Vancouver or not, but if you keep taxing people, a lot of people are going to be driven out.
AI, is it starting to make money for people now?
This is what they claim. You know, I can't verify it. I mean, all the news reports on TV about how the companies that are producing the AI generators are putting so much capital into it and claim to be generating more income. You know, I'm a big skeptic with regard to earnings reports, period. I mean, they play around with this stuff. Sometimes they out and out lie about stuff. They exaggerate things. So much of the market is based on the buy side of the market and keeping the market up. And certainly they've done a good job of that with, you know, 7 or 8 or even 10 big name stocks that take so much of the percentage of the indexes that it really distorts what's happening. So if you're not in the 7, 10, or 15 top stocks, you really haven't yet participated to that level, and all this is based on the premise that they're making tons of money with expanding into data centers and AI and so forth and so on. So some of it may be true, or other of it could be, as I think, more exaggerated. But you know, the stocks are just way too high. They've gone too far. That, in my opinion, discounted too much into the future. And when you see stocks like Meta or Microsoft sell off here in the last 24 hours, you realize that it's not always, you know, true about what's happening on the profit side for these big name companies. You know, the AI, all that stuff is great. You can utilize it in your business. And I play with ChatGPT. I'm not an expert in it by any stretch, but, you know, it's a useful tool. In the terms of how the companies are benefiting it, some are benefiting more than others, you know, so time will tell. But I don't like to chase stocks. You know, I wait for the sell-offs, so that's where we're at.
On the investment side, with the tremendous amount of munitions expended on Iran, is that a good place to be in the U.S., people who have to resupply all those bombs and missiles?
Well, some of the big-name companies in that space, you know, like Raytheon and so forth, that's just an example, that's one name, well off its highs, it already discounted a lot. I mean, it was a $215 stock, and now it's down to $175. So I think a lot of that may have been discounted in the price of the stocks. They have had a correction, though. So as a trader, you may say, well, in the case of this one stock, it dropped 50 points. Maybe it's a trade down here. But they're certainly not continuing to blast off into new highs every day. So I think a lot of it has been sort of discounted in the prices already. That's sort of my opinion. So it's like that's an investment statement. As a trader, you know, let's say a stock dropped 50 points, it's probably good for a 10 or 15 or 20 point bounce. It might be a trading opportunity. And I'm looking at the Raytheon chart right now. It looks a little bit oversold. It might be a nice little trade here. But, you know, whether to say you just have to go in whole hog into the missile business stocks, thinking that they're just going to go up forever. Again, I think you may have already seen it in the price of the stocks.
What about oil service companies? I'm thinking of people like Schlumberger, who service the oil fields. Are they not going to be super busy around the Arab states repairing all the damage done by the back and forth missile attacks?
Absolutely. In fact, Schlumberger is on my list as one of my favorite names. Halliburton as well. Both made new highs today, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, because the repairs and stuff with regard to the damage that was done out there is really good for these particular companies. So, you know, the infrastructure aspect of it, regardless of the price of oil, is going to keep these companies busy for a while. So, again, you're chasing them up here, but historically, you know, a name like Halliburton, it's around $42 a share. I mean, looking back in 2014, it was high as $73. So, you know, it's not anywhere near its all-time highs, where many of the oil stocks had gone to all-time highs. So there's probably a nice catch-up play there, and I think they're good names.
Anything on the geocosmic front we should be keeping an eye on right now?
Well, we have a lunar cycle coming here on May 1st, and I keep my eye out going out into June with the summer solstice around the 20th of the month to see if there's any going to be change of direction into or around that summer solstice period. And there's nothing going on the sun that I've seen the last few days. So the cell may go away theory is a cyclical event. We have the lunar cycle here, and you know, we'll see. I mean, I would bet a pullback, and we'll go from there. But doesn't mean we can't go higher again later. We got, as I said, the midterm elections, a lot of political forces at work here. So I don't think it's time to wholesale short the market and just think it's going to crash. I don't think that's happening so fast, but it will come, and it may come after the midterm elections. There may be a much bigger correction in the markets into next year. So we're just going to have to watch the tape and see what happens. But so much of it is news-driven, you know, with the Mideast and with the elections. And Donald Trump's always coming out with executive orders. In fact, today he just came out with an executive order regarding retirement accounts. Apparently, I don't have all the details, but apparently, you know, if you didn't have a certain IRA set up with a company, you couldn't really utilize the tax advantages of having a retirement account. But he issued some order today saying that the average individual can now do it, even though they don't have a company-sponsored plan. So, you know, that's obviously another attempt to try to get the markets up and to keep them up and to, you know, help investors. So a lot of these positive pushes are going to be underway here. So, you know, you would think that between now and, except, you know, I might comment here about a pullback or a little correction here, but you would think between now and the midterms they would go up just to get votes. So maybe after that point we might be arguing for a bigger sell-off, and particularly if the Republicans lose control of the House or the Senate, one or both. I don't think the market would like that very much. So, you know, there'll be a lot of volatility here now between now and November. And, you know, we're just trying to trade them as we see them, you know. So that's pretty much the summary, you know. For those who are investors, I guess I would probably lean more to a positive outcome between now and the election because of the election. Doesn't mean we can't have corrections here along the way. And then after the election, you know, we'll see, of course, what the results are. But more than likely, we'd have a more significant pullback after that point. So it's, you know, again, I'm chart related. You know, I'm just a devotee of what the chart patterns are saying more than what, you know, common news or common sense would say. Cause I always feel the charts tell you what's happening. So, you know, we're up. Too high here short term, so we'll see how it plays out.
The poly markets, I think that's what it's called, where you bet on what's going to happen, only it's more like the stock market than going to a betting shop. Are you familiar with that?
I heard of it. I don't really utilize it, and you can probably teach me some stuff there.
I know nothing about it, but considering if you're an insider, the kind of money that you could make betting that, you know, the price of oil is going to jump or drop dramatically overnight, as you can see where the manipulation threat is.
Well, that's always been the case in the markets. You know, basically the markets have been manipulated. There's always been inside information, even though there are laws supposedly against it. You know, there's been the whole argument about what, at least here in the U.S., you know, what congressmen, senators, and representatives can do with inside information, and many have profited significantly. I guess former House head Pelosi has been criticized for making tons of money because she was, you know, head of the House of Representatives, and there's all these legislation supposedly to restrict it, and that's just a glaring example. And it happens on a much smaller scale, you know, within companies, within within the exchanges, among traders. That's just the nature of the beast. I mean, it's human nature, you know, so not much we can do about it. You can try to legislate against it. I mean, there are laws supposedly, but it continues and has continued. I mean, you're going to tell me that inside information hasn't been around for thousands of years with regard to any type of economic event? Sure, it has. So, in these earnings reports that come out, you think people don't know in advance what they're going to say and whether certain people have access to that information and position accordingly? Of course they do. And even if they, you know, ban it to a higher level in Congress, you think it's going to stop them from gaining access? You know, greed is greed. You know, that's just part of the human condition. So it also makes things fun when you think about it. I mean, if it wasn't all this chatter and information flowing around, things wouldn't be as exciting in the markets. You know, there's always rumor about what something's going to happen. But normally, you know, you see it in the charts, and that's why I keep going back to that. I mean, nothing is 100%, but I can show so many instances over the years where you see selling coming in, and maybe it is that inside activity. You see it in the charts where volume comes into the downside, and suddenly bad news hits 2 days later, and obviously somebody knew something ahead of someone else, and I've seen this thousands of times in the last, you know, 45 years. So that's why I try to look to the charts for information. Of course, it's always going to be surprises. But going back to my comment much earlier, Jim, you know, why was crude oil going up way before the war started? You know, the word got out. You know, we're going to go after Iran, or there was, you know, we already had the Hamas invasion of Israel. We knew there were things going on in the Mid East, you know, you just sort of watch the tape and you try to, you know, play it accordingly or invest accordingly.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for anyone on our show or for the show, you can send your comments to info@HouseStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HouseStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HouseStreet.com Radio is a production of House Street Media Incorporated.